record, let it show that all the board members are present. Trustee Gary Criddle, can you please lead us in the pledge?
Yes, please stand. Salute, pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. To all of our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you will be muted for the majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star 6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute and or unmute you during the meeting, and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you. There is one correction on the minutes, on the agenda. If you will go to page 3 of our agenda, and it has to do with the two approval of the minutes, we're going to approve both minutes with one motion. So, okay, there was no action to announce and taken in closed session or out of closed session. Next, we have board comments. Trustee Davis.
Yes, I participated in the Marysville Academy for the Arts and Lyndhurst High School's graduation. And I can only say that it was a joy and a wonderful experience to see students and parents and their associated loved ones join with these momentous ceremonies. Everything went off like it was absolutely like it's always gone. But it was wonderful to share with the students, the graduates, the parents, and the staff. And I just really hope that our graduates can enjoy a little bit of the time, unless it's getting into college or a job, and just really commend both MCEA and Lyndhurst for a job well done. Thank you.
Trustee Crawford.
I had the opportunity. I stopped in to see David Jones and Grace at Zabe Lincoln. I don't know what they're calling it now, but they're setting up really well. Going to have upwards of maybe an ADA of 200. Looks like they got their full accreditation. It's going to be a tremendous program. I'm really excited about it. And hopefully we can get the 9 or 10 additional teachers there, Mr. Carry On, when we can. We're really going to be hired here soon. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Boone?
Yeah, I would like to thank Ms. Hansen and Ms. Matthews. I attended Foothills and Marysville High School's graduation. They both did a wonderful job. Ms. Hansen is retiring after this year. She is retired now, so we wish her the best. And then we have a presentation tonight from Jessica Maslin, and you know, she's taken time to get this on the agenda and put together a presentation for the board, but it says that it's a 3-minute presentation. And according to Board Bylaw 9323, number 5, with board's consent, the president may increase or decrease the time allowed for public presentations. So being that we have a person from the public that's taken the time to put together a presentation and taken the time to go through the proper channels to agendize the item, I think that we need to give her longer than 3 minutes to present her entire presentation, you know, maybe 10 minutes or something. I don't think we should shut her off at 3. So I would like to respectfully ask the chair if that's something that we could entertain.
So are you proposing 10 minutes, Trustee Boom? Or what is your time limit that you're proposing?
Well, we can do up to 20 minutes on board comments. I don't know how long our presentation would take. So, I mean, to be safe, if we did 15 minutes,
I was just going to say, I don't think this actually falls under public comment portions of it because this is an agendized item.
Right. It is an agendized item, but it also says it's limited to 3 minutes.
Right. So are you suggesting you're proposing that we give 15 minutes? Is that what you're saying?
That would be nice to give her enough time to do her presentation.
Okay. Well, I don't I haven't had the opportunity to make sure that board bylaw follows or goes with this particular, you know, correspondence to the district. Are you saying that we have a board bylaw that specifically
yes.
talks about correspondence to the district or
yes.
is it public comment?
I believe it's under the Ralph Brown Act, number 32 or 9323, number 5. And specifically states that public participation, a person wishing to be heard by the board shall first be recognized by the president and shall then proceed
to
comment as briefly as the subject permits. Individual speakers shall be allowed 3 minutes to address the board on each agenda or non-agenda item. The board shall limit the total time for public input on each item to 20 minutes with board consent. The president may increase or decrease the time allowed for public presentation depending on the topic and the number of persons wishing to be heard. So this is, you know, a presentation by one person. The president may take a poll of speakers for or against a particular issue and may ask that additional person speak only if they have something new to add.
So I know we've done that in the past, and it seems to me we've always done that under public comments. I don't know if that goes, you know, directly with correspondence to the district. Do we have Mr. Carrion? Can you help us with that, or?
But what I would suggest, I'm sorry, is that it's set up with the correspondence. It's a three-minute presentation, but the difference here is the board can ask questions. So what I would suggest is that after 3 minutes, the board ask questions, and the speaker can continue to speak. Or ask a clarification question.
Mr. Carrion, do you have anything to add? I'm just looking for help. Mr. Carrion, are you muted? I don't seem to hear you in my headphone.
I apologize. I was muted. It's clear that the informational item is not part of public comment because it's an agendized item. And so ultimately, the discretion is for the board to determine the length of time. While I know that information has been given about the Ralph M. Brown Act, it's an informational item. And so to me, just at a glance, it's part of the agenda and not necessarily part of public comment.
Okay. So again, I guess we could ask other board members. We could see about getting consensus. Mr. Boom, I think 15 minutes is way too long in my eyes. But you know, I could see trying to maybe bump it up to 5 minutes, and we could ask for consensus for the board or from the board. So we're looking to. have consensus from the board to, when we get to that item, I guess, to have, it almost seems to me that we should discuss that when we get to it, Mr. Boehm, instead of during, but why don't we hold off on that? Because I think, you know, right now during board comments, we'll address that when we get to that item. Is that okay? Thank you. Okay, next we have Trustee Doug Criddle.
No comments at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Trustee Hasty?
Yes, sir. I was a MUTA member for 34 years. I taught for 27 years at the Feeder Elementary and Music School, Feeder Elementary and Middle Schools. It is terribly distressful to see the split in our staff for my school district. The majority of the Lindhurst staff has signed a letter voicing, quote, little to no confidence in UTA and their leadership at this time, end quote. 49 teachers signed this letter. Five of these teachers requested removing themselves from CTA and MUTA. Every letter and every phone call that I have received has been requesting adamantly that we extend the day so our students that I represent have the opportunity to catch up and expand their opportunities for life. Not just, it's not a question of whether it's convenient, ladies and gentlemen. We are in a crisis in our community, and the choices that we make today as a board, as administrators, as faculty, will impact our community for the future generations. This has to change. I would like to read this last paragraph. At this time, we have little to no confidence in our local union, particularly its leadership. We are writing this letter voicing our concerns and our displeasure. It is our contention that MUTA works for us, not the other way around. MUTA in general has not asked us ever what they could do to help us in this process. When I was a teacher in Marysville, MUTA was super helpful, and I'm very grateful. Back to the slide. To this point, they have only hindered us. Again, to say we have no confidence in our union and their ability to negotiate this process is a huge understatement. We are simply voicing our strong concern that as a teacher-driven issue, MUTA has virtually thwarted every attempt that we have made to create a six-period day with intervention. Remember, this type of schedule has previously been instituted twice in our school district with seven periods already with no bargaining. Due to COVID-19, our students are hemorrhaging credits. I hear heavy breathing. It needs to stop. Hemorrhaging credits, and UTA is literally doing nothing to help us stop it. Furthermore, there are those of us who suspect that the leadership, MUTA leadership, is using this as an opportunity to bargain towards our current contract. That is the exact reason why we as a staff have little to no confidence in MUTA and their leadership at this time. Respectfully, and then we have 49 members who signed this letter. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have to work on this, not just as we have time. It has to become a forefront issue, and it has to get fixed. Thank you.
Well done. Well done, Allison.
Thank you. Trustee Gary Criddle.
Originally, I was going to have no comment, but now that Ms. Hasty brought it up, yes, I agree with you. It is an issue that needs to be addressed. Personally, my two cents, I don't see why one school site can have a modified schedule while the counterpart school has a different schedule, and let those experts at those sites determine what is best for their kids. I trust them and their judgment and what they need to have done to make sure that their kids are successful. So I agree. I think something needs to be done sooner than later. Thank you. No more comments.
Thank you. I have a couple myself. So first of all, I want to congratulate all of our students on their accomplishments this school year and wish them the best in their upcoming year. I also would like to thank all the parents and the MJUSD staff for their role in supporting students this school year. We all know how tough it's been. I also want to thank all the stakeholders for taking part in our superintendent search meetings and surveys that were out last week. And I also want to give a thank you to Mr. Williams and his team for all they did to support this process. So I went back and reviewed the public comments from our May 25th board meeting. And there, again, were three Lyndhurst High School teachers commenting on their school's current six-period day and how it is not supporting a large population of their students. In listening to them, it sounds to me that this proposal for a change in the current schedule is first teacher-driven. Teachers have got together and saw an issue, and they've come up with a plan to try to benefit their students. Secondly, it is driven by the LHS WASP report, as Mrs. Magana had stated. And then thirdly, it's driven by the federal program monitoring review that was done last year. So it is my hope that MUTA, the LHS Guiding Coalition, and the district can act on this topic in the very near future to provide equity to all students of Lyndhurst High School for next school year. The other thing, I just wanted to give a little update on the Arboga School expansion project. Not sure if anybody's got to be out there, but holy cow, it's amazing what they've done in 7 days of work. So core construction is really moving on the project. You wouldn't hardly recognize the school as it used to look. So I'd really like to thank Mr. Barnett, Mrs. Lossing, PBK Architect, Core Construction, and all of the staff that is kind of at our Bogus School that's happened to put up with the construction. But it's amazing what they've done. So thank you. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen.
Hi, Angela.
So I am coming to you from my car this evening because I am actually camping, but there was no internet in the actual campsite, so now I'm hanging out in a parking lot on a hill hoping that my internet will hang in there until the meeting is over. So I was hoping that I would keep my comments short this evening. The main thing is that I really do hope that everybody from teachers to our bus drivers to our classified and our custodial, everybody at the district office, our board members even, I hope people are able to get some much needed, much deserved rest and relaxation this summer. But also the big topic, of course, is bargaining. And I also received the letter from Lyndhurst. And along those lines, I mean, MUTA at this point is working to do what Lyndhurst would like. There are two separate things going on with Lyndhurst. One is that they have asked about having a seven-period day plus intervention. The seven-period day is not within my purview. That requires some further work with the district, especially if that site is going to be different from the other high school. There were board members who were in the meeting that we had where that was discussed. In the short term, what they are looking at and what they had a consensus vote on was sticking with their six-period schedule but adding intervention within the day, 3 days a week. Their consensus vote did end up going through, is my understanding, although there's one piece of the puzzle left to the side admin that has not been accomplished or followed through on. But despite that, MUTA has been communicating with the district through Mr. Carrion. We actually just spoke yesterday. And so MUTA is not holding up the intervention within the six-period day out at Lyndhurst for next year. We actually, in an effort to make sure that we can make that happen for next year, we're pulling that into a side letter that, like I mentioned, Mr. Carrion and I just had a brief conversation about yesterday. So that is the plan. So we are not holding that up in the current bargaining for this year. That's why we have removed it and taken it out separately so that we can get that done. That's a faster process, an easier process, especially an easier one to accomplish over the summer. So that's MUTA, the bargaining team, their leadership, has gone that route. I believe there's a communication issue and gap that is going on there that needs to be addressed on all sides. So with MUTA as well. And so I'm working on that. But that is the plan. As far as I know, out at Lyndhurst next year, they will have their 6-period schedule. They will have structured intervention within the day, 3 days a week out there. Like I said, we are trying to get a side letter together on that. There are some issues that they brought up with two other sites. And so not to go through that whole ordeal, I can talk to any of the board members if they would want to give me a call to hear all about that whole situation. But the big thing is, and the big news is, as far as I'm concerned and as far as MUTA is concerned, is that we will be working with the district to not only negotiate for the school year we just got done, 2021, which we're hopeful that that is going to get done relatively quickly, hopefully also relatively easily, hopefully also without legal, because that will get that done much more quickly and more easily. But like I said, we have pulled the intervention piece separate from that, and we're going to be doing a side letter on that. But other than that, like I said, I do hope that people are able to enjoy some of their summer. And if board members have any questions about the letter they received or MUTA leadership or bargaining or anything, you are more than welcome to call me or anybody from the bargaining team, and we would happily, gladly answer your questions for you. But other than that, I will, before my internet lets go, I will tell you all to enjoy the rest of your evening, and also acknowledge and appreciate the fact that we did have meetings with the superintendent search group as well. I know the board member mentioned that too, and so MUTA would like to say we did have all teacher meetings, and we also had a MUTA leadership meeting, so that is appreciated as well. But otherwise, enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. It is much appreciated.
Thank you, Mrs. Stiegel. Enjoy your trip.
Thanks.
Next, we have Operating Engineers, Local Union, number 3. California School Employees Association, number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit. We have no public comments tonight. So our next item is correspondence to the district. So we're back to our previous discussion. Is there a consensus from the board that we would like to extend that time limit of 3 minutes? What I'll do is maybe we'll go through and I'll see if there's consensus first that want to extend it, and then we'll talk about the time. Is that appropriate, Mr. Bohm? Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So, Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford? Trustee Crawford?
No.
Trustee Bohm?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
I'm hoping we can get it done in about 10 minutes. I think I respect and appreciate the preparation that she put in. So, yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen? No. We do have consensus to move forward with extending the time. Is 5 minutes, do we think, is long enough, or do we want to go more? I know it seems to me 15 minutes is pretty excessive.
Mm-hmm.
Past practice, when we had this same kind of item, we did stick with 3 minutes. But
I would concur with Stacy for 10 minutes.
Past practice, years for many, many years, we didn't limit the time limit on them. We had people come forward and we allowed them to speak. We allowed people to speak on agendized items that were in the room. It seems to me that we're moving further and further away from allowing the public to speak in a public meeting, and I don't quite understand why we're moving that direction, but these are public meetings. These are the people that have voted for us and represent us. So it just boggles my mind that we keep moving further and further away from allowing the public to speak. But I would agree 10 minutes, I think, would be great. Thank you, Allison, for suggesting that.
Well, and Mr. Boom, it's not my intent to limit public, but I do think we have procedures. We, just like we have in public comments, we can have as many people talk as we want, you know, 20 minutes per topic. And so again, it certainly is not my intent to limit the public from speaking, but I do think there needs to be some type of process to make sure we have order when we're doing that. So I hear on the proposal of 10 minutes. Yes.
I was just going to share that where this process generated was from the how do I get an item placed on the meeting agenda for discussion and setting up this template, because what happens here sets a precedent for all public correspondents that wish to meet with the board. And so the 3 minutes, the difference between 3 minutes in a public comment and 3 minutes in this setting is that the speaker's written report, written information is shared with the board, and then there's an opportunity for board discussion at the 3 minutes. And so that permits the board to extend the discussion and the presentation for as long as the board as long as that discussion exists and the speaker is able to give more information. So hopefully just understanding that this was set up so this would be the same for any speaker as what we've done in the past with public correspondents.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. We do have consensus of the board, though, that would like to extend this to a longer period of time, so we're going to honor that tonight. I am going to go through and again take a vote for the 10 minutes. So, Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford? Trustee Crawford? Are you there, Trustee Crawford?
Well, I'm sorry, I was muted again.
So what is your consensus vote for extending that 10-minute time limit?
No.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, no. We do have consensus. So correspondence to the district, we'll have a 10-minute presentation followed by board discussion. Correspondence to the district dated 5/5/21 from Jessica Maslin regarding facial coverings. This is an informational item. We do have in our special reports pages 1 through 36. So Mrs. Maslin, go right ahead.
I have to say I did put a lot of time into this, many hours. I'm also at work right now getting ready to do a night shift, so it's very insulting to those of you who are not willing to give me extra time on this, but that's okay. So first I want to say my name's Jessica Maslin. I'm a registered nurse. I'm also in graduate school, so I'm very familiar with reading and evaluating scientific research. I do a lot of it. But most importantly, I'm a mother, and my husband and I pulled our son out of school last year for the first grade because we did not want him to take any part in distance learning or masking or being told it's dangerous to play with his friends on the playground. It just doesn't seem right to us. So I'm here tonight to discuss why I believe that masks are not needed for children. I don't think they ever were. But especially now, every teacher has the option and the choice to take a vaccine, so our children should have a choice to wear a mask or not. I also want to point out my son has been going to a homeschool co-op this entire year, He goes to school every day with about 20 other kids, and they don't mask or distance. They get to see each other's smiling faces every day and eat lunch together. And I'm happy to say there's been no illness. So let's see. I need to share my screen, I think. I don't know how to do it. Hold on. Okay, and before I start going through each slide, can you guys see this? Yeah? Okay, great. I just want to send a message to my community, especially to the teachers and parents out there that might be watching or might watch later on. Our job as parents and teachers is to make sure we are keeping our kids healthy and safe and protect their well-being and advocate for them, most importantly. So I feel that this year we have all been guilty of complying with guidelines that aren't really based on great quality evidence. And I'm guilty myself. I just started speaking up about this a few months ago. But I want to say the time is now. We need to start standing up, and we need to come together and support each other and advocate for our kids. That's what our job is. And, you know, half the kids don't want to wear masks, and then the other half are now brainwashed thinking it's protecting them, and it's not. So please, I want to empower you guys to please stand up, be brave. You know, I know teachers are scared for their jobs, scared to speak up, but the only reason we live in a free country is because we had brave people standing up for what was right. So, and to the board, I want to say, you know, you were elected by the people of this community. You are there to represent us and to ensure the safety and well-being of all of our students and staff. And, you know, I think it's time for us to stand up to the state of California, honestly. I don't think we should be following their guidelines. I mean, is there a way we cannot follow their guidelines? I'd like you to let me know what happens if we don't. And if you're not going to stand up for what a lot of parents want, then I will probably work very hard to replace you. So let's get on with this slideshow. So the question we need to ask ourselves is, why are children being forced to wear masks at school? And the obvious reason is because we have this unnecessary fear of asymptomatic spread of this virus. So a couple things I want to mention is we've known this whole time that the cases of COVID in children are very low. As you can see on this CDC website, posted this the entire year. The kids are the ones here at the bottom. They've been low. And as you can see, it peaks in the same year. It always peaks during flu and cold season. Nothing new. This one is new to me that I found out that was surprising, but the transmission rate between and among students is pretty uncommon. And the funny thing is the California Department of Public Health put this on their own website showing how low of a chance kids have of spreading the virus to each other or to adults or to adults to children. Yet they put out these guidelines that completely contradict themselves. So if you can see here, there was an Australian study that was conducted before they really implemented masks. So I'm guessing it was towards the beginning of the pandemic. And just very low rates of transmission between children, 0.3%, 1% for children to adult, and 1.5% from adult to child. It's just, with that low of a rate, it doesn't make sense to me. And then finally, I tried to link a video in here that showed Dr. Fauci saying on national television, on the news, that in all the history of viral illnesses, there has never been, or asymptomatic transmission has never been the driver of outbreaks. It's always been symptomatic transmission that drives outbreaks. And then this large study, this Wuhan study I posted here, it's a huge study, 10 million people. And, you know, in China, they were going door-to-door testing people. So it's probably pretty accurate information. I don't know, they haven't really given us a whole lot of accurate information this year, but from what they found is out of 10 million people, there were 300 asymptomatic cases found, meaning 300 people tested positive that didn't have symptoms. And then they did a bunch of, you know, contact tracing of those 300 people, and none of them spread the virus onto their close contacts. So, you know, this is after a lockdown, so I would assume in a normal environment, probably we'd find more than 300 asymptomatic cases, but still, it's extremely low cases. So this, I just wanted to point out that the quality of evidence matters. I went on the CDC website, and they, if you go under their the Science of Masks link, they post about 45 articles that give their reasoning for their guidelines. And I can tell you, because I love research, I looked at every single article they posted, and a majority of them are in this cohort study level, this yellow one right here. And the you know, gold standard for research is right here in this green, this randomized controlled trial. And then the highest quality is this meta-analysis. And what that means is that they're taking a bunch of randomized controlled trials and examining all of them to find trends. So they're using studies that are low-level evidence to justify their guidelines. And I'll tell you also that about 42 out of the 45 studies that they posted on their website were rapidly produced between the months of about April and September of last year. So they completely ignored all research we had before the pandemic started and then suddenly produced all these studies right away. And a majority of them were simulation studies, meaning they didn't even include real people. So a lot of them were, they used like a coughing machine, and it would cough onto a mannequin that was wearing a mask to see how many particles would be on the mask. So, you know, things like that, when you don't even consider the human body and the human immune system and how it's designed to protect us and that there's built-in mechanisms to protect us, it's just, we can't follow that. Poor research that they're presenting to us. Oh, and one of the studies that the CDC posted on their website for the mask showed that in our last pandemic of 1918, some of the communities that adopted universal masking did a lot worse, had worse outcomes than the communities that did not use masks. So that was interesting. And then this is just a couple that I posted that the CDC has on their website. They did a meta-analysis, which I mentioned is the highest quality research. And as you can see here, almost 70 years of research, they found there was no significant reduction in influenza transmission with the use of face masks. And if you question that COVID is different than the flu, that maybe it's more contagious, well, I also have another study that I forgot to put on here. But it's a really good one. It's called the Danish study, and it's another randomized controlled trial. And basically, it was done in Denmark, about roughly 5,000 participants, and this was done last year in the spring. And half the people were told to wear masks all the time in all of their, you know, daily life interactions, and then the other half of people were told not to, or they could have a choice, okay? So what they found was, let's see, I think in the mask group, there was a rate of 1.8% people that still got COVID. And in the unmasked group, or the choice group, there was a 2.1% people that got COVID. So that's a very insignificant difference in mask versus unmasked. And this is from our current pandemic. So that was interesting.
So, Mrs. Maslin, I apologize for interrupting you, but you are at the end of your 10 minutes for your presentation. So we'll open it up for board members to have comments or questions.
I have a question.
Sure.
Go back to your last slide.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to get the numbers accurate. So you call it a near zero efficiency at 0.3?
Yeah, so it's talking about the particle size of viruses and masks. And viruses are so much smaller than masks that they go through. It's not going to stop a virus particle because they're so small.
Right, but my question is, could you state the number again, the difference between those who had wore masks and the ones that didn't?
Oh, in the Danish study?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sorry it's not on the slide, but I have it here in front of me. So let's see, there was 4,862 participants. In the mask group, 42 participants, or 1.8%, did get infected with COVID. And in the unmasked group, 53 participants, or 2.1%, got COVID. So, yeah. What, 3% higher? Very insignificant amount. And we're doing all this for something that's not significant.
My question is, if it's your mom that gets COVID, not wearing a mask, I think we have to really be careful with our choices.
So the reason that, well, what the CDPH says, the reason they want kids to wear masks is for source control. It's not to prevent viral illness. It's for, so what source control means is preventing droplets when you cough, talk, you know, from spreading. And I don't know what parent out there doesn't teach their child how to properly cover their cough. If you don't know, you're supposed to cough in your elbow or away from people. And that is a form of source control. So if we teach our kids what they're supposed to know, there's no reason they should be wearing a mask. And also, if they're sick, they need to stay home from school.
Other board members, questions or comments? Mrs. Maslin, do you have any idea of how many deaths there have been from age 0 to 10? I guess maybe it would go to 1 to 10 in the United States.
Oh, I have seen that data in the past. I think there's less than 500. I'm not positive on that. I'd have to look it up on the CDC website.
Less than 500. Thank you. Any other comments or questions from board members? Ms. Maslin, I want to thank you for taking the time to put this information together, and thank you for what you do for our community as being a nurse. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Moving on. Superintendent's report. Mr. Cena.
Thank you. Together, serving every student every day in every way. Going back to the summer of 2019 when we were, as a district, looking at our hedgehog concept, where the concentric circles of where one's passion is and what person can be or a group can be best in the world at and what drives them, what's their engine, is that in this district, it's the spirit and the soul of the people who work and give of themselves so much. Because we serve students that have high needs, over 81% of our students, and serving the whole child, and both in academic and social emotional learning, and as we're developing our multi-tiered system of supports, that right now there are 505 MJUSD employees, that's certificated and classified, who are enrolled or finished the conscious discipline instruction, which is really about adults learning how to self-regulate so that adults can then teach and model for students how to self-regulate, which is particularly coming back from COVID to school, that the mental health, both for students and for staff, that this helps lay a foundation for fundamental to every school day and to every interaction. And it's not just teachers. It's classified. This isn't, and it isn't a curriculum. It's a in-the-moment working out, communicating, problem-solving, interacting. And so this will, as I said, set the service of days. And this is starting now in summer school. And right now in summer school, yesterday summer school started, as we've talked with the expanded learning opportunity grant. And currently there are 2,440 MJUSD students. That's a little more than one in four of our students are at 20 sites receiving summer school instruction, both in social, emotional, and academic learning. And during this summer, we're working toward the fall. And this summer compared to last summer is really different. If you can go back to June 15th of 2020, you might remember that at that point we were looking at a budget deficit of about 8 to 10% for us. That was like we're looking at, you know, right in the face of an $8 to $10 million cut to the district. Also at that time, the health and safety protocols, they hadn't really come out. They were mostly recommendations, and also how to approach a refined or better approach to distance learning, as well as any approach to blended learning. Really, at this time, we had very few or no tools and very, very little fuel. This year, throughout the state of California, the state is encouraging, and 99% of school districts report that schools will start in the fall, full day instruction, 5 days. And the guidance is driving it. Right now with schools, it looks like vaccinations is a key component of that, and encouraging people to become vaccinated. Also masks. The guidance right now for schools, realizing today is June 15th and that so much of our economy, to open up the economy and opening up and, you know, reducing or minimizing the protocols at schools so far, it's continuing as we finish the school year, and we've got our eye on it, and we'll follow the guidance, what it is. Also, a fundamental part besides vaccination and masks is COVID testing, particularly for people that are symptomatic. That's part of the element, coming back. And then, as mentioned, is continuing that if one's sick, not coming to work or coming to school. And then tonight, in terms of the budget piece, so there's more direction. There's more direction on instruction. There's more direction on what's going on with health and safety. And in terms of the budget, right now tonight, Assistant Superintendent Penny Lossing, Assistant Superintendent of Business Services Penny Lossing, is going to share tonight results of the governor's May revise. And as we're entering the summer, the proposed budget for 2021, and that just bringing to the conscious level that there is a lot of one-time money that's founded on tax revenue that was not expected, but this money is not ongoing money, and so it's money that it'd be wise not to obligate that money, and that and also Ms. Lossing will share that all districts have rising costs, which will, which is something that every district, no matter their reserve, needs to plan for. And so this year, compared to last year where we were, have a sharper focus. We have more tools. We have more fuel. And all of the plans that we're working toward, that many of them were shared last week with the LCAP presentation, and that people have had time to look at and to digest, and that we're exercising in summer school, that all of these plans are consistent with the state's. Now that they have a surplus, the state, we've shared with the board the Roaring Back plan, the state's idea of how moving forward in the next few years with the surplus, as well as the intent of the supplemental and concentration
grant funds, as well as the report this morning from the CSBA Delegate Assembly report. It's all consistent. So all of this comes together in order for us to best prepare to work together to serve every student, every day, in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have Superintendent, the number one, item number one, approval of minutes. Minutes, we're going to do both of these meetings with one motion. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 5/25/21 and the minutes from the special board meeting of 6/1/21. Is there any discussion regarding these minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Crawford. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that board members would like to have pulled?
I have one item under business services. It's number 2.
Can you give us the page, Mr. Davis?
It's 7.
Thank you. So page 7. Go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No worries. It concerns the renewal of this contract with our legal team.
Okay. So we're pulling item number 2. Are there any other items that board members would like to have pulled? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve with the exception of item 2, page 7.
Okay, we have a motion to approve by Mr. Crawford.
Is there second.
A second? Second by Trustee Gary Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Now we have item on page 7, item number 2 under business services, agreement with Kingsley Bogart Group, LLP, for legal services. Mr. Davis?
Yeah, the question I have is do we consult other legal groups before we renew a contract with an existing legal group? And it's more of a process question.
Thank you, Board Member Davis, for the question. We did not this year. That is something that can be done. Typically, in my experience, when you're working with a firm that knows the issues in your district, and there's in particular of counsel, the gentleman Bob Thurbin, who you've met, he's been in board meetings before. He's been working with us on any of the buildings and grounds facility issues. And then, of course, the other attorney, Paul Gant, who is working with negotiations. Typically, when you have things that are ongoing and any particular lawsuits that might be that the district may be dealing with, the district, unless there's a reason, wouldn't necessarily look to change. As far as rates go, they're very much in line, if not lower than possibly others. Sometimes law firms can spend more time with routine type questions. I have not found that to be, which is a good benefit to the district as far as cost of legal fees. And there wasn't any reason to look elsewhere. In the past, we had worked with another firm when I came on board that was handling another consent item, a termination of a contract a PPA agreement, and that was another firm that was being used. Sometimes districts may use more than one. It depends.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question, as long as we're on the subject. Couple of questions, actually. Who determines which meetings that the legal counsel will come to and how long they're going to sit in on the meeting? I mean, I've seen them sit in on five-hour meetings when I was thinking, well, why is the attorney still present in the meeting? And also correspondences. If legal counsel isn't asked to write a correspondence and they do we pay for those? Have we gotten a lot of correspondences this year that were, you know, put out by legal counsel without the district first saying, hey, we would like you to put out a correspondence?
To my knowledge, no. We have not, to my knowledge.
Question in terms of the meetings. He's invited to the meetings, well, the meetings, he's been invited by me. In some of those meetings, we'd need to break down which meetings, but in some meetings, he views and does not charge. In some, if he's there waiting for a specific agenda item, so it would need to be broke down by meeting, but it's pretty specific what. And if he's just on there for 5 hours, then that's not – he's not getting paid or charging for those 5 hours. He's charging for the item and is doing other work while listening or waiting. And in terms of the correspondence, yes, the correspondence there are some correspondence that are sent out that as a firm they send out as general knowledge. There are others that we request that they send, and then there are others that they seek permission to send. But to just send it, and we feel that's not correct, we have addressed it, and we do not pay for that.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Cena.
Thank you.
I would like to just remind board members about our governance handbook and our so far approved board protocols that if we have concerns about especially consent items, to be sure we give staff a heads up to make sure they're going to have all the information to be able to answer your questions at the meeting. So, again, I would just request that the board members follow that our board-approved protocols. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve item 2 under the business services.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second? I'll second the motion by Rasmussen. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
No.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 6 yes, no vote by Trustee Crawford. Moving on to new business, Board of Trustees, Superintendent Search. Board members will meet with consultants from the Costco Group to provide input for the district profile to be used to recruit the recruitment of the new superintendent. This is a discussion item. Do we have Mr. Shapiro and Dr. Navarro?
Good to be with you this evening. And let's start by just kind of reminding you where we are in our process, what has occurred, and what our next steps will be in the superintendent search process. As you'll recall, we met 2 weeks ago at a special meeting on June 1st, and at that time we did some brainstorming with the board on the items that would be the beginning of formulating the profile for for advertising the superintendent position. Since then, and I want to thank Mr. Cena and also Brian Williams for their help in setting up what was a very successful outreach to stakeholders for meetings and for surveys. We wound up holding 16 different focus group meetings and had 132 people meet with us all together. And with Mr. Williams' help, the survey was distributed very widely, and we had somewhere in the neighborhood of about 125 surveys returned. And we forwarded the report of the all the focus group meetings and their comments, as well as all the comments we gleaned from the surveys, onto board members. And we suggest that that will not only be useful to the board in this next step in formulating our profile, but we think this is excellent information for the board to have as you move forward in general to get this level of input from your community. It's very rare to get that many people to give you input. So we appreciated the participation of everybody. What we're going to do tonight is work with the board to finalize that profile. Then in terms of next steps, we had said initially we would begin advertising the position on June 21st. We think we're going to be ahead of schedule. We think we'll probably be able to get the advertisements, the posting of the position together before the end of this week, either Thursday or Friday of this week, which will put us a couple of days ahead of the anticipated schedule. And then the application period for superintendent will extend 5 weeks. And that will take us to July 23rd. That will be a very intensive period of our doing recruitment and having people apply and our doing reference checks and screening. And then to remind you of a date that we already agreed upon last time, we will be meeting with the board again, and we hope that we'll be able to do it in person this next time, on July 29th at 4:30. And that will be to have reviewed with the board all of the applicants and to select the candidates that you would be interested in interviewing. We will give you our information about everything we've learned, and you will determine with us which candidates you want to interview. So that's where we fit in the timeline. But now what we want to do is look at the information that we received from our stakeholder group meetings and surveys, as well as the information the board gave us on June 1st. And on the report we gave you, I'm going to refer you to the very last page, if you have that in front of you. And that's the page that we labeled Recurring Themes from Stakeholder Input, if you have a chance to look at that. The reason we looked at that is there are so many comments that we received from 132 participants that it made sense after they each identified the priorities within their group to look for the common themes, those that we seem to occur over and over again that we thought best represented what people were telling us, and then compare them to the information that we received from board members, especially after board members voted by sending back your priorities and we established what your priorities were. And what we found that was remarkable was the congruence between the recurring themes from the stakeholders and what the board members had identified. So I'm going to start by just going through that list of recurring themes and see if that pretty much matches what you feel to be representative of what we'd like to put in the profile. And at that point, you can add or make some changes if you wish. So, starting with the strengths of the district, which is so important because when we advertise a position, we do want candidates to know what is really strong and what is good about this district. So one point was dedicated certificate and classified employees who work as a team. That dedication and working as a team came through, and this covered all employees. But in addition to that, there was a special focus on teachers. Hardworking teachers who are focused on the needs of students. So that notion that the teachers are hardworking and they really will do everything they can to meet the needs of the students, that came through and clear. Another strength that the board identified, and so did stakeholders, was a diverse student body and community. the diversity has been identified over and over as a strength. Next is the financial stability of the district. Board members have expressed it as district is fiscally sound and prudent. We just use the term financial stability. Another item that came through from stakeholders as a strength, collaboration with community groups to develop resources. The collaboration between the district and various community groups to develop the resources that will help students in the district. That came through over and over. Another strength, the district has been proactive in communicating with parents and community members. People told us how much they appreciated the district reaching out to keep communication going in general, but especially during this last most difficult year. And then another item identified by our stakeholder groups that was also mentioned by the board, strong career technical education programs. So these items came up over and over again, and I thought it was remarkable how much they paralleled what board members said. So the first question is, the list that I just read, do you agree with those items as items that we should highlight in the brochure?
Yeah, Joel, I'll go first. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think we're looking at and talking about the same things that the community is talking about, and I didn't see anything here in reading this that it was off base on. So I was very pleased to see what that said.
I thought it was remarkable how closely aligned what the board picked and what the community members told us was. So it really sees that you're seeing things very much the way the community does. I think we've got a good list there to go into that brochure that highlights the strengths. Is there anything that was left out that you think is important to add?
Anything, board members? Oh, looks like it's pretty comprehensive, Mr. Shapiro.
Cool. Well, then we want to go to the next list, which were the critical needs and challenges facing the district. And often it's worded with beginning with need, but sometimes it's worded with just what the issue might be. So, again, board members mentioned this, and so did our focus groups and surveys. The need to improve overall student academic performance. That is right at the top of the list. Students overall can be doing better, and we want them to be doing better. And then within that, the need to expand programs for English learners. That was mentioned both by the board, but very often by community members. A factor that has to be taken into account is the next one. The geographic differences within the district create challenges regarding transportation and internet access. That there are parts of the district where transportation and internet access are a challenge, and that is something that needs to be looked at. The next one, and it could be worded in different ways, but this is the way we most often heard it. There's a difficult relationship between district and the Teachers Association in collective bargaining. And perhaps we might word that instead of saying difficult relationship, we might say need to improve the relationship. That might be another way to put it, but that seemed to come through often. Next one we had was the need to increase overall parent involvement. And there was a need to improve communication between the district and employees. That was mentioned by many employees. So those came through over and over again. Any comments about those challenges or needs that were mentioned?
I guess one of the things I noticed looking at the data is that you have two sides to the story about the communication out of the district to parents, teachers, staff. And so I think that, you know, if we could, I understand that communication is a day-to-day. It doesn't get any easier, and it doesn't, you know, and some days go better than others. But the idea is that we want to keep our communication as strong as possible. We are adding staff to help us with that communication. So that's the one that I found interesting. between the groups. Some said it was great, and some said it wasn't. So it's not a, I don't think it's a consensus, but it is a challenge.
Mr. Davis, would it be more accurate, rather than the way I read it, to say need to keep communication as strong as possible?
I would agree.
Would that be more accurate?
Yes.
Okay, let's change that. Good. Anything else that there might be a question or concern about what we put down there?
Other board members? Nope. Looks like we're good on that, Mr. Shapiro.
Well, let me just want to go back and be sure you're clear. Yes, you're okay with us indicating in our brochure one of the needs is to improve the relationship between the district and MUTA in collective bargaining? Do you feel comfortable with that?
With regard, so it actually says the difficult relationship between district and teachers association?
In collective bargaining, but I would rather word it as need to improve the relationship rather than say difficult. But are you okay with us keeping that in there?
I would agree with you on saying improving that. We don't necessarily want to advertise our dirty laundry, so to speak, but then again, we don't want somebody coming in and realizing that there's a challenge here that they were not informed of beforehand.
Well, I think if we said need to improve, that puts the emphasis where it belongs. And not on the difficult issue. So if that's okay with the board, that's how we would reword that. Then if we're okay with the items under the critical needs and challenges, let's go to the last section. And of course, it's always interesting to hear what people have to tell us about what they're looking for in the new superintendent. And again,
Mr. Shapiro, I was just thinking on that item again. Are we wanting to specify one collective bargaining unit in that item? Or?
Well, the reason I put it that way is that's what we were hearing more and more. But we could generalize it and say need to improve relationship between districts and employee associations in collective bargaining, if you think that's
I was just kind of throwing that out to the board, too, to see if it's I don't know if we want to narrow it to just that teachers association.
Yeah, I would concur with that. Make it more general.
I agree.
We don't want to put a target on one particular group. That kind of sets up the new person coming in to have some bias.
So here's the way we would word it, if it sounds okay. A need to improve the relationship between the district and employee associations in collective bargaining. Would that work?
I think that sounds fine. Thank you.
Good. We need you to help us with the wordsmithing that will state these in the best way. Now, under the qualities of the next superintendent, many again were in agreement with what the board said. Sometimes the wording was just slightly different. But here's what we have: an experienced educational leader who is familiar with populations similar to Marysville. Someone who will put students first. A strong leader who will seek input and yet is decisive. Someone transparent. A good communicator. Someone who will visit schools and connect to students and staff members. Someone honest and direct who has integrity. Someone who knows the community, will listen to stakeholders, and will become involved with the community. So those were the key items that we kept hearing from stakeholders. Do those sound about right to you?
Board members, comments?
I would assume that the experienced educator, they would have a proven track record, and I'm wordsmithing a little bit, but wanting someone that has a track record and being in a position that could understand, articulate, and demonstrate past practices and successes in their districts,
that they could be relatable to ours.
How about if we do this? Tell me if this would kind of work. If we take that first item and turn it into two items, one would be an experienced educational leader with a proven track record of success, and then a separate item, a leader who is familiar with populations similar to Marysville, so that we cover them but don't try to squeeze them into one. Would that cover?
I don't think you could have said it any better. That sounds really good to me. I don't know about you guys, but
I think that's fine, Mr. Shapiro.
Yeah, I think that way we kind of state them as two separate points, but they're both very important. Any others that you would want to elaborate on or change?
Nope, I'm not hearing anything that looks good, Mr. Shapiro.
Well, I appreciate your really looking at what the community told us and seeing it as a match for your own perspective. You've made our work easy because now our next step is to craft the brochure. And again, I want to thank Mr. Cena, not only for helping with us with the arrangements for all of our meetings, but in looking over the introductory portion of the brochure so that we can get all the data about the district correct, because he knows better than anybody else what some of the correct information would be. So we'll be putting that together, and we will include the brochure and the application. We'll send a copy of board members so that you have it. And we'll also be in touch with Mr. Carrion, because we are not able to post directly on EdJoin, which is the system in California that everybody posts positions on. Only the district can do that. But we'll work with him to post it on there, and then we will distribute the brochure in a massive way through districts and through state, through county offices and through all our partners, and really do major outreach. So I think we can actually get this going by this Thursday, and that would be our proposal.
That's great. So, Mr. Shapiro, before we leave, I just wanted – we had a couple other dates I wanted to make sure we had confirmed by all board members. I believe it was August 7th and 8th, which was a
correct.
Saturday and a Sunday for interviews. Are all board members still good for those two dates also? Yes, not hearing anybody have conflicts.
Can you see what those dates are? I wrote them down earlier, but I just want to make sure I have them.
August 7th.
Saturday, August 7th. And Sunday, August 8th.
Okay, yeah, I've cleared them. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Shapiro. Thank you, Dr. Navarro.
Right. Thank you very much, and we'll move forward with our next steps. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have Personnel Services 2020-21 Initial Bargaining Proposal from the MJUSD to the MUTA. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to introduce the initial proposal from Marysville Joint Unified School District, MJUSD, to the Marysville Joint Unified Teacher Association, MUTA, for the 2021 school year. Mr. Carrion?
Thank you, Mr. President. Certainly do not want to label as perfunctory or lessen the importance of these particular items, but certainly in a similar manner as we have in years past, want to ensure that we follow requirements of the EERA and ensure
Mr. Carrion, I'm sorry. I need to interrupt you if I could. We're actually holding a public hearing. I wanted to make sure I said that part. So,
yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Carrion.
Yeah, thank you. As I was alluding to the fact that we want to make sure that this isn't just simply a rudimentary and perfunctory process, we wanted to ensure we were following the requirements of the ERA by making public the various initial proposals from bargaining groups to the district and the district as an agency under the ERA to the various bargaining groups.
Do we have any members of the public that would like to speak to this item? Do we have any questions or comments from board members? Was that all for that one, Mr. Carrion?
Yes.
For that item. Thank you. Okay, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Boom. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next we have item number 2, 2020-21 initial bargaining proposal from MUTA to the MJUSD. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to introduce the initial proposal from the Marysville Unified Teachers Association, MUTA, to MJUSD for the 2021 school year. Public hearing is now open. Mr. Carrion, are you speaking to this item or?
Just in similar fashion, wanted to ensure that there is the opportunity for the exchange, unlike the other ones that will be coming forward here in a few minutes. But ultimately, this is the association's initial proposal to the district, as you eloquently put it. Thank you.
And again, to remind the public and board members, that's page 79 in our special reports. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this? Board members, comments or questions? Not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Doug Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Item number 3, 2020-21 initial bargaining proposal from MJUSD to CSEA number 326. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to introduce the initial bargaining proposal from the MJUSD to California School Employees Association, CSEA number 326 for the 2021 school year. Public hearing is now open. Mr. Carrion?
Just simply, as we bring forward these two particular items, for the California School Employees Association local chapters, we would expect that an initial proposal would be reciprocated to the district from each of those groups in the near future. As just to bring awareness and reminder that we do have 4 Public Employment Relations Board recognized groups in our district, in addition to 2 other associations in the Association of Management and Confidential Employees, along with the supervisory unit. So unlike most other districts that may have a wall-to-wall classified bargaining group and a wall-to-wall certificated employee group, we have a total of 6 groups.
Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak to this item? Board members, comments, questions? I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Crawford. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Item number 4, 2020-21 initial bargaining proposal from MJUSD to CSEA number 648. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to introduce the initial bargaining proposal from MJUSD to California School Employees Association, CSEA number 648 for the 2020-21 school year. Public hearing is now open. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. One last time, and just to add some clarity to the items, the California School Employees Association local chapter 648 represents our preschool site supervisory teachers, while the CSEA and its chapter 326 represents many of our paraeducator family liaison classifications that include some after school STARS providers.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak to this item? Board members?
Just a clarifying question. Mr. Carrion, you said that Chapter 648 is for preschool staff?
The preschool site supervisory teachers, not the paras. The paras in preschool are represented by CSCA 326.
Got it. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Period. I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. Trustee, roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Griddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Griddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Next, we have Business Services number 1, 2021-22 proposed budget for adoption. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to review the district's 2021-22 proposed budget for adoption. The public hearing is now open. Mrs. Lossing? You're muted, Mrs. Lossing.
Thank you. Thank you, Board President Rasmussen, board members, and Superintendent Cena. I have a presentation for you for the proposed budget based on the May revise, and I believe Brian Williams will be putting that up on the screen for us. There we go. Okay, we'll be holding the public hearing this board meeting, and then we'll do the actual budget adoption a week from now, next week on the 22nd. Next slide. So I wanted to start with an acknowledgement. You know, we currently have an unfilled director of fiscal services position. So Cindy Helms, our categorical accountant, took the lead with building this budget. And not only did she build the budget, but she started from zero. In the past, the budget rolls forward. It's much more difficult to build a budget, a zero-based budget, but it is more accurate, and that's the project Cindy undertook with the help of Amy Littlefield in the fiscal department. Kim Sutherland contributed, Angela Salcido from my office, and then we did have some input from our Ryland School Consulting, Terry Ryland and Doug Cramser. I just wanted to acknowledge them because we wouldn't have this budget if they hadn't all stepped up, and especially Cindy, to do a wonderful job with this. Truly outstanding. Next slide, please. I have prepared an agenda. This is a list. There are quite a few things. It's fun-filled and a packed agenda for this. We'll get started. Next slide, please. So this may hopefully is becoming familiar to you, our LCAP budget cycle. I'd like to share this so that we understand exactly what financial numbers we're talking about, asking the board to adopt. And right now we're looking at the next year, adopting the budget to begin the fiscal year 21-22. With that, we'll be looking at estimated actuals for this current year of 2021, and that's our last best look at a budget for this year before the fiscal department will start closing the books on 2021 and we'll present that in September. And as you can see, there's three different colors on the budget cycle, and the outlier being last year, which is that unaudited actuals in September. And then the blue signifies the different versions of this year's budget, and then the green signifies when we start looking at the following year's budget. So just so that we're clear, these numbers are next year's initial budget for adoption and the last look at the current year's estimated actuals. Next slide, please. So this is a big picture. I'd like to share what's going on at the state level. And this is a slide borrowed from School Services of California. The italic middle line is they didn't present what happened to us. I added that for our reference. But in May, Governor Newsom announced that our state is facing a $100 billion surplus, which he's dubbed the California Comeback Plan. And I just have to take a moment and reflect. If you all recall, a year ago in June, we were looking at what we thought, because the pandemic was just like 3 months old or so, we were looking at a potential 10% reduction last year at this time. And that would have been about a $10 million reduction. So what a difference a year makes. And then, of course, while California is looking good with the budget, there are, you know, the areas of concern being the unemployment rate being very high at 8.3. That was as of March. And then we have $12 billion slated for additional stimulus checks for those individuals that are eligible. Next slide, please. So this is a real busy school services slide, but I wanted to include it. And then I've added to the left there the circle, which is what we want to focus on. But basically, the governor's budget is looking at our Prop 98, which is what the state constitution or the Prop 98 requirement is that it's up to 38% of all the state's general fund revenues will go toward education. What they're looking at doing is taking one-time payments of an additional 1.5% and somehow making that 2% so that the minimum guarantee goes up an additional 2% of the entire state budget toward education, with the goal, and that's where I've highlighted and bolded that ongoing cost of universal transitional kindergarten. That's the hot topic in Sacramento, that everyone is looking to provide enough funding for schools so that all four-year-olds can attend transitional kindergarten. If you'll go to the next slide, this kind of goes with that, and this is a lot of numbers again. This is the California General Fund budget, and that's, you know, all the numbers from 1 year, the current year, to the new year for adoption. But I've highlighted what I think is going to be impactful, especially for the want of the every four-year-old to be able to attend transitional kindergarten. And that's because they're looking at resources increasing a little over 5.5% for the state budget, but the expenditures are increasing over 19%. So that's a big difference there of deficit spending for the year. Now, they do have a lot of funds to do that with, but the other concern about transitional kindergarten for all four-year-olds would be the school facility needs, because all those additional students have to have a facility to be housed in. And as we know, the little people have special needs for their classrooms. So that's something the state will also have to deal with, you know, universally throughout. So that's a couple of things I wanted to let you know about the state. and its budget and direction. Now, the next slide, this is just another, a lot of information, but it's looking now like the cash deferrals we've talked about before that were substantial this year. February, March, April, May had some portion of our typical main apportionment from the local control funding formula deferred to next fiscal year. It looks like the next year's budget, if any, because this may, the June to July may also go away, again, because of all the funds the state has, they should take care of all these deferrals and not have school districts, you know, have to wait for their cash. So the school services is showing next year, the June to July, which is just a couple of weeks. Our cash position with the district is good and solid. We don't have to worry about that June to July. We don't have to worry about closing our books this year with any negative cash at all. So we're good there. Next slide, please. That's going to take us to this last look at this year's budget. Next slide. And this is the first part is all the revenues. We have the four main source general purposes, our local control funding formula. And then the columns reflect the unrestricted side and the restricted side, and then the total for the combined. The second set of numbers is all the expenditures, certificated salaries, classified salaries, all the benefits that go with those salaries. This should look familiar to you. Our books and supplies, other services, capital outlay, indirect. Of note, I wanted to share the transfer out because you'll have revenues, expenditures, and other sources, uses, which would be transfers out or transfers in, and then the contribution from the unrestricted to the just two programs in this district that don't have enough funding, or it's, I'll explain, it's special education, the special education program, and the routine restricted maintenance is a required 3% of the expenditures of the fund to be contributed to that. The special ed program is a good program, but has been seriously underfunded for all districts by both the state and federal funding sources for many years, and continues to be rising contributions. So those will always balance to zero, because it's moving from one side of the district to the other. So the other, the transfer out of $744,000 includes $600,000 to the Cafeteria Fund 13, and that's as we've shared before, due to loss of revenue from the school closures. You know, we had maintained prior year, we had to maintain staff. This year, we just lost some of the participation that we otherwise would have. But that was also reduced from what we anticipated around second interim in March. If you recall, it was about $1.5 million. So it's ending up that we're doing much better. Before COVID hit, Fund 13 never needed a contribution from the general fund. So we're glad that it's reduced to here, to this amount. And then the $144,000 is the standard Title I transfer to our charter school NCAA. I circled the fund balance increase, $25 million, and that's mainly due to the COVID funds that we've received but not yet budgeted out. So next slide, please. So we had revenues, expenses, other uses. And then if we had a longer page, this would have been the bottom piece. And that's always the fund balance and reserve section. So this is the current year right now. And we have the ending fund balance, as you can see, with the COVID funds in there. It's huge, but that's because of mostly the COVID funds, the $27.2 million restricted. A lot of that is the COVID funds. The unrestricted estimated fund balance would be $42.6 million. On the assigned fund balances, I like to share, I can just briefly, if you'll look at the unrestricted column and see the non-spendable, briefly, that is our $30,000 revolving cash that we keep. The district keeps it like a petty cash almost. If there's some need to write a check, sometimes that happens with payroll. We have to have that $30,000 just, and then the rest of that is our stores, our warehouse inventory. So that's called considered non-spendable. The committed piece, the $956,000, that is previous other post-employment benefit amount, an amount that has to be used in that manner. So the assigned, I circled that because I wanted to share that what we've done is added two new assignments, and I think they're very important, and I want to point them out because, as you know, we have, with COVID, we have purchased a tremendous amount of technology, both for students, for staff, you know, connectivity, classroom equipment, for the, you know, the videos, everything. And so, Brian Williams, our director of IT, has put together a 5-year technology replacement plan because we want to make sure we account for that. We don't want to be caught, without planning for that expense on an ongoing basis as a need to replace thousands of Chromebooks, you know, staff computers, all the peripheral technology equipment. So he's identified the $4.74 million that would cover a 5-year technology replacement plan. The one-time facilities is just maintained as it had been before. And then the second new addition to assigned fund balance is the 5-year textbook adoption. And that was Dr. Greco putting together the needs for curriculum over the next 5 years because, again, we need to have those expenses identified so that we're not caught unaware that a good amount of money is needed for them and to keep and to assign funds in the fund balance to take care of that. The other is the first two COPS payments on not our energy efficiency because that'll be paid through savings in our utility costs, but this is the COPS that we refunded November of 2020 from a prior certificates of our participation, which is really long-term debt for the district for previous school facilities. And so those are identified. We have school site carryover. It looks like our sites with the reduced school year that they had as far as in-person instruction, school site carryover looks to be about $760,000, and that's specific to each school, and we had it all together. Same with the lottery site carryover, and then just carrying the elementary counselors that had been previously grant funded and the grant expired, but the need, we still have the need for those counselors. So $16.6 million in the assigned. The unassigned REU is restricted for economic uncertainty. That's 3% the state requires. And then unassigned is the other amount of unassigned fund balance on the unrestricted side. Next slide, please. So I put together some information on the COVID funds to update you with that. And here across the top are the different pots of money of COVID funds, the allocation amount, the deadline for expending them, and then the amount remaining to be spent. So we have been able to expend the ESSER 1 completely, the $3.3 million. ESSER 2, there's a balance of $9.6 million. ESSER 3, $29.9 million. It is not currently in the proposed budget simply because the state didn't have the software updated in time for us to include it. So that will be part of the 45-day budget revise that can be done after the state enacts the budget. So I'll bring that back, and we'll make sure that that gets in. But it was the state not having that software updated in time to be able to do that. So there's no revenue or expenses for that. If you recall, we had looked at Covalod's improvement project with $20 million of that. So the in-person instruction, $3.3 million remaining, and then the expanded learning opportunity, $7.1 million. And then I have some more detail about these next slide. So on the ESSER 2, here's some of the positions. I won't go through each one. You can see them here. This PowerPoint will be available. We'll put it on the district website under the budget documents. And also, I believe all the board members have a copy or should have a copy of it. Those positions are budgeted for 21-22, and we've set aside money for 22-23 as well, if the need is to maintain them. Expanded Learning Opportunity Funds, that's the pot of money, the $7.1 million that Dr. Greco had brought the plan to you with the LCAP, and that's including the revenue to fund our summer school this year, that second day of summer school today, this year and next summer as well. And then it'll provide, according to the plan that the board has approved, after school tutoring next year and then additional expanded learning opportunities per the plan. And I think those are still evolving as well. Next slide, please. So ESSER 2, a little more detail there. The current uses, it's not just those positions, but other things that we've had the need to use for COVID-related needs. $3.5 million with a remaining amount of $9.6 million. The allowable uses do state that a portion of the remainder may be used for school facility upgrade projects to improve indoor air quality to lessen transmission of COVID. I would recommend that we do, much as we did for Covalod, a simple feasibility study at Foothill Intermediate School to see if there's a potential improvement that we can do there. And then also out of ESSER 2, we would want to transfer per the Title I formula, like you saw where we had that transfer of Title I to NCAA. Recommendations, school services. If we do that for Title I, we should also use that formula, which Cindy Helms again said it wouldn't be difficult to do, and determine how much of the ESSER 2 would go to MCAA for both ESSER 2 and ESSER 3. And I mention that specifically because they also are at a point where the Marysville Youth Community Center, MYCC, I believe it is probably going to be demolished with the Caltrans change in the road structure, the infrastructure there. So they're going to lose their facility for all of their production for their arts. And so they're going to need to look to do something somewhere to take care of that within the next probably couple of years. So the ESSER 3, again, there is another plan that the board must approve by September. And then one of the stipulations for the ESSER 3 money is that 20% of that must be for instruction. So that works out to about $5.98 million. And then another 80% may be used for school facility upgrade projects, and that's the 23.92. So again, that recommendation would be to go ahead and fund that Covalod Elementary and then give MCAA their share for their 360 students. And I'll be able to provide that number soon. Next slide, please. So that brings up, if you recall, there were several pots of money there. The in-person instruction is just since March. when the state provided the in-person instruction and the expanded learning opportunities, $3.3 million and $7.1 million. Well, this $3.3 million may be spent on allowable uses of COVID testing, which could be prevalent next year. We, you know, we don't know what the new guidance will be, but we probably will need to be doing COVID testing, and it could be substantial. N95 masks have been discussed too for employees. OSHA provided some new guidance, but then pulled it back. So we'll be hearing more about that soon. But it also talks about allowable use of one-time salary increase to bring students back to in-person instruction. And so I went ahead and put the cost of 1% increase for all employees is $898,000. So just remembering that these are one-time funds. You can't spend them on ongoing expenses. Next slide, please. So that brings us to the proposed budget for next year. Next slide. And this is some of the LCAP budget additions. When the LCAP was presented, we wanted to share what some of these new positions have been determined that we need to add to the district to help improve student achievement. These are estimates. You see nice rounded numbers. That means, you know, that it is an estimate. And I won't go through all of them. These are all in the LCAP. These were not in the LCAP previously, but through all of the outreach and meetings and input from all the different stakeholders, it was determined these were the highest need. Plus, I know on the EL facilitators, that was part of our federal program monitoring that indicated we definitely need to beef up our EL program. So some expenses have been removed from the LCAP to better reflect measurable services. And that those, a couple of those that were fairly substantial, years ago, I'm not sure how many, before I was here, there was a teacher salary increase that was attributed to supplemental concentration grant. That's been removed from there. Wasn't something that could be easily measured. A lot of measurable services, if you don't get the improvement that you expect or need, then you would take it away, but we don't want to take away any salary increases. So that's been removed from the supplemental concentration portion of the LCAP, and it's now on the unrestricted side of the budget. Another thing that was removed were the PE teachers, because they are part of our core program, and supplemental concentration grant is to increase or improve the core program for the students that generate those funds. So next slide, please. So now we're looking, just like we looked at the estimated actuals for the current year, this is what we're projecting for this new year's budget. Local control funding formula is our main revenue source up there at the top. All the new positions in the LCAP are part of these numbers. There's placeholders until people are hired. If we can't fully hire, we'll be able to reduce those expenditures. But hopefully we'll be able to hire the positions we need. And then I just made a note, there's probably unknown expenses due to COVID that we don't know about, so of course they're not in here, and we'll have to add them as they become known. We did include a transfer to Fund 13 just in case. It's quite possible we won't need it, but I would rather have it in there and not need it than need it and not have it. So we can always reduce that transfer out to Fund 13 if everything, the participation increases and things go well there. So that, all of this together, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that local control funding formula number shortly. But so overall, it provides a decrease in unrestricted fund balance of $1.7 million. Next slide, please. So, again, I'm showing the assigned fund balance. As you can see, the non-spendable is still there. Ending balance on the unrestricted side of $40.8 million. The committed is reduced because we've been using some of that OPEB fund to fund the other post-employment benefits. And what that really is the retirees, when the district has collective bargaining agreements and the district agrees that if you meet this criteria when you retire, and then the district will pay a portion of your health and welfare costs, that's what that is, other post-employment benefits. So anyway, that reduces to what's left in there. And then this, you'll see, is very close to the other number. What's different is the lottery and school site, maybe just the lottery carryover, but pretty close to the same. Recognizing, again, that those future expenses that the district is going to have to expend and identifying them, the technology replacement and the textbook curriculum adoptions that will be coming up. So the $25 million is because we have not yet budgeted. If you don't budget the expenses from all that COVID revenue, it falls to the fund balance. So that's why it's down there, because we haven't actually identified a lot of that yet to put it in the expenses. So next slide, please. So all those numbers are built on certain assumptions that we make. And so the district is projecting an enrollment increase of about 230 students. However, I'm concerned that we may not have a commensurate amount of ADA, because remember, enrollment's the number of students we have, and average daily attendance is the amount we get paid, because we only get paid when students are in school. If they miss a day, they take that away from school districts as far as funding goes. So we've budgeted based on what we know we'll get, which is the guaranteed ADA of this year. Every school district is guaranteed a minimum of the prior year ADA for a current year. Now, if the enrollment is up and the attendance percentage goes up, meaning the ADA goes up, we'll get that money. But this would be the least we would get, and that's what we've budgeted. Just because if students with sniffles shouldn't be in school, and that could mean that there will be a lot more absences than in the past due to COVID. So we're being conservative with budgeting our revenue. So for the next 2 years, so we're looking at the current year estimated actuals, the budget year, and then the multi-year projection for the following 2 years. I've actually decreased, when you look at that, by 70. And that's because next year at this time, when we're adopting the budget for next year, it'll be based on the attendance for this coming year. And if that's down, then we don't want to overproject. You never want to overproject your revenue. You can always increase it if you need to, but you don't want to count on money that's not there, because a lot of times there'll be expenses that we don't count on. So we definitely don't want to do it in both places. Next, please. So here's the revenues. So here's this big mega cola. It's wonderful, 5.07%. But we need to remember, 2.31% of that should have been this year. So we've had to absorb all of the naturally occurring additional costs with zero cola this year. So they're taking what they should have paid us this year, and they're adding it to next year. The next year's COLA would have only been 1.7%, and they added an additional 1% there. And so the reason that it doesn't add up to 5.07, which is what the mega COLA is because there's a compounding. And I went ahead and put the calculation, and I got that from school services. So just so everybody sees how it actually adds up. State special ed should increase by 4.05%. Other federal and local, we've budgeted constant, remain the same. We don't know yet. When we know, we'll increase it. And then ESSER 3, again, will be added at the 45-day budget revision because the state software didn't have it available when we were building the budget. So next, the following year, COLA drops to 2.48, and then, oh, that last one should be 23-24. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. That should be the last bullet point of year should be 23-24. So it's the next year and then the subsequent 2 years. But that second year out is 3.11. And, of course, this will change and may change based on what the state actually enacts. So we prepare it all, then the state will enact the budget, and then again the 45-day revise will occur in August. Next slide, please. So on the expenses and the multi-year, we've projected an increase of 2% to cover the step and column costs each year. Classified doesn't have a column cost, but the certificated has step and column. Salary schedule increases are not budgeted. I wanted to make sure we're aware of that. It doesn't mean that they won't happen or shouldn't happen. I'm not saying that at all. I just want people to understand I didn't know for sure what it would be, so I, you know, you don't include it. You know, you just, and then you make sure that people understand that this budget, it would be in addition to this budget when we do, if we do, and when we do salary schedule adjustments. You'll recall the enrollment growth of approximately 230. So we've added 6 FTE. Mr. Carrion will be hiring additional teachers for that anticipated growth. All the benefits are adjusted based on the changes in salaries. And then I went ahead and added for everyone's information how much these pension increases and everybody is happy that we have sound pension funds, but it's just really unfortunate that the state puts it on the school districts to have to provide this additional money. Because as you can see from this year to next year, 2.21% in PERS on every dollar of salary for a classified employee who has PERS pension. So, and then CalSTRS, 0.77% this next year, and then also the 2 out years you can see. But what was unexpected, or I guess it's not when you think of all of the unemployment benefits that people in the state of California have been receiving, well, that's we're paying for that. So it's gone up from 0.05 of a percent to 1.23, an increase of over a whole percent on every dollar of salary. It's terrible. And then it continues in the 2 out years. They expect it'll go down, but still 4 times what we've been used to. So just so everyone's aware, there's a lot of increases that are tied to our salaries on the benefit side. Next slide, please. This is just basic material supplies, other operating expenses such as our utilities and our contracts for services and so forth. We increased that by the consumer price index, like it's supposed to be for inflation, 2.4%. And then we've budgeted in the COPS payments that are coming up. So in that multi-year, it's showing now. Other uses, the contributions, I mentioned the special education program and then the routine restricted maintenance. The special education, we're projecting about $1.1 million additional each year for contributions on special ed. And again, it's not anything to do with how our special ed program is ran or performed, but it's because every school district is not funded appropriately to support the special ed programs. And then the transfer to the cafeteria fund, I'm very optimistic and that we'd be eliminating that in the next 2 out years. So next slide, please. So now this is really busy, and it's not us. It's just an example that school services provided. And, and the way to read this, it's a big picture look at multi-year projections. If you look at the fiscal years at the bottom, you'll see two columns for each year. It's got the current year, we're just getting ready to finish, and then the 21-22, and so each two columns for each year is the revenue on the left and the expenditures on the right. So what's noticeable about this current year we're just finishing, look at the revenue, nothing, because we got no COLA. But see, we had these increases. So it's showing that. And then on the next year, which is the year we're looking to adopt, you see that mega COLA. And you see all that growth there. And then you see on the expenditure side, the step in column, the STRS rate increase, the PERS rate increase, the unemployment rate increase. And then that, for us, it's the additional $1.1 million is what we're expecting to pay additionally for the special ed program. And then the 2 out years, you can see where the growth, the COLA drops, but then look at those increases. They get even bigger for the, if you remember from that previously, the little spreadsheet that shows the PERS and STRS increases. The unemployment rate goes down, but it's still higher than it was. So those are the 2 out years. So next slide, please. So this, lots of numbers again, but this is our 3 years, the budget for adoption year, and then the next 2 years. And I showed the, circled the other outgo are the beginning of the COPS payments, and then the overall, net decrease to the fund balance for this upcoming year, what we're projecting as of now, and then the next 2 years. So next slide, please. So as before, what you just saw was revenue, expenses, other uses, and then if we had a longer page, you would be seeing the reserves and fund balance section. So here, I'm just noting the unassigned other, because we're maintaining the assigned throughout, and you can see the decrease in the fund balance. Still is a good, solid fund balance. And I just like to mention here that our multi-year projection is based on what we know right now. When the state enacts the budget, it can change. Anytime our expenses change, our revenues change, then these projections also change. So it's a point in time. It's not a forecast. It's not supposed to be what we expect. It's just a projection at this time based on the information we know. And we do it because the County Office of Education and the California Department of Ed use it as an indicator of our financial stability. So, while, and then that last line here, while the above projection indicates declining reserves, our fund balance is sufficient for a financial certification of positive. So we're really glad there. And next slide, please. So, okay, here's a topic that I don't believe we've talked about in the past. There's been a cap on district reserves that was passed into law a few years ago, and then in 2017 it changed a little bit. And if certain things happen, it triggers the law that the cap for local school district reserves would be put in place. And it appears that with all of this funding available at the state, these certain things that have to happen, it will trigger that law for district reserves for not this coming year, but the following year, that our reserves for assigned and unassigned can't be more than 10%. So I wanted to make you aware of that, and then we have some thoughts about that, if you could turn the page, please. And that's a school services also slide. So this, it will require board action that when that law is triggered, We would need to adjust our reserves so that we're not above that 10% cap amount. And just again, everybody remembering that reserves are just one time in nature. We cannot use them for ongoing expenses. But some possible adjustments might be to move that five-year technology replacement funds and the textbook replacement funds, because pretty much we're going to have to use those as the need occurs. We can move those to the restricted side, and it takes it away from the unassigned and assigned unrestricted side of the budget. Some other possibilities would be to move some of the reserve to Fund 40 for a capital outlay project. That's, you know, a possibility. Mr. Spina and I were speaking, and there's another possibility. You know, we have the ongoing COPS payments that we have to make over the next 20 years starting next year. And we could commit. There's different components of ending fund balance. And committed funds, we could commit 2 to 3 years of those future payments so that we would know that we would have them. And a committed part of the ending fund balance has to have a board resolution to commit those funds. That's another possibility. I didn't have room to add that, but we can have further discussion. I just wanted to, first of all, make you aware of the possibility of that trigger for a 10% cap on the assigned and unassigned unrestricted fund balance, and that would be in 2022-23, and to start the discussion about that. And I think that's about it. We have maybe, oh no, we have other funds. all of our other funds, and this does include the general fund, but all of our other, and our new student activity special revenue, if you see that $588,000, that's what all the student body money, it's a lot of money. But now it's in our books. If you recall, we approved Fund 8 recently, and so that's showing now for the first time we've captured, and we just, it's on the books. It's actually, and each school has their own bank account, but we capture the amount here so that the board's aware. And then all the other funds will be positive. The $4 million negative there on the capital facilities, that's our developer fee funds, and that's being budgeted for the remaining, our BOGA TK-8 expansion with that guaranteed maximum price that the board approved recently. So, next slide. That would bring us to us recommending this is for the public hearing presentation, and then we will do a simple budget adoption next week. Our administration would recommend that we move forward with the facility feasibility study for Foothill. And then, I'll present a 45-day budget revision in August that'll include that ESSER 3 money and any other significant budget adjustments based on when the state enacts the state budget and how that might differ from what we've built our budget on. So I think the next slide is for questions.
Very nice presentation, Penny. The one question I have is the whole business with the Marysville High School track. Has there been any consideration of adding that to the capital improvement?
You know, that's a good point, Board Member Davis. We have next week a proposal for a facility master plan that will, I don't want to, I know that we have it for next week, but it would definitely be part of a comprehensive facility master plan. And then, it kind of gets put in there and then eventually prioritized. But there hadn't been a lot of other discussion about it that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
So, Penny, would that facilities master plan, would that be updating the one that we already have? I don't think it's been updated for several years, because since I've been on the board, we've done several facilities master plans, and they seem very time-consuming and expensive. So would we just be updating what we already have in place, or would we be starting from scratch and starting over again?
It would be starting from scratch, and they have a lot better software now where you can really make it something that the Buildings and Grounds Department can use and maintain and keep up to date with what the needs are for all the facilities. And they have, it's actually PBK Architects, but they have a presentation that they'll share, and it's next week. We have it on schedule for the agenda for next week. Comprehensive and something that's needed, I believe, for any state funding. At one point they were requiring a current facility master plan, and now I can't remember if that actually is new law or not, but we'll find out. We'll find out for sure.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to see the feasibility study plan for Foothill School, so thank you for that. And then I just got one question for you. It really doesn't have to pertain to the budget, but just my economic mind kind of working. We had a year of COVID, so income taxes have to be down. Everybody's out of work. Okay, property taxes stayed neutral. Okay, there was no velocity of money, so we don't have the big turnover for sales taxes. Mm-hmm. So where's all the extra money coming from in the state? Do you have any idea? I mean, because all of our revenue streams are gone or neutral, so it doesn't make any sense to me. It's just kind of a riddle. I'm just wondering, where's all this extra money coming from?
That's part of this. Penny, I remember this from the May revise.
Uh-huh.
You're right. This whole scenario is kind of on loose footing. That increase, the unexpected increase, is from people with the stock market, the richest people in California. Yeah, the richest people in California investing in the stock market, that money is what's generating this surplus. So that's a key question.
Yeah, thank you, because that's all about to change. And when it does, it's going to get ugly. And I don't understand how the state of California calls it a surplus when we have so much unfunded liability. You got billions of dollars of unfunded liability, yet you've got a surplus. Anyways, just one of my pet peeves with the state of California and the way that they promise the school district all this money that they really don't have. So.
Right. And it does look like sales and use tax went way up and is projected to be up. But if you think about all of the stimulus checks, people are spending them.
People out of work, how would and no restaurants open, a lot of businesses closed. How do you have the velocity of money turning that dollar over to create those taxes, those sales taxes? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't compute in my brain anyways. Anyways, it's getting late. We need to go. Thank you.
Okay.
I would say, Mr. Boom, I've seen a lot of new travel trailers out there.
Have you tried to do any building? The prices of wood and steel are killing us off.
It's really bad. And then the most volatile is that personal income tax with the wealthiest people, and they can easily move out of state to a less taxed state as well. It's very volatile.
That's where all the trailers are going.
Ms. Lossing, I would just like to thank you and your team for putting together a great presentation and a couple of areas that you talked about, transitional kindergarten, and I think we have probably have our transitional kindergarten for as many kids as we supply our need for that. So I think our district's doing a very good job with that already. And you know, talking about these like ESSER II funds and ESSER III funds, and I would think this would be a very good time for our district to try to do a lot of facility upgrades, because there is so much need that we have. And I think it was thinking back when we entered into the contract with SiteLogic, I've seen a lot of upgrades already done to our district that I think is very beneficial for our classrooms, which is going to be very beneficial for educating students. But I think this is a time for us to be able to really upgrade our facilities and using those funds. So that would be, and I agree with Mr. Boom, I would like us to move forward on a feasibility study with Foothill. Any other comments or questions from board members?
I have a question about the deferred payments. When do those come in?
Oh, I'll have to send it to you. They moved like a portion of each month to various months throughout next year. We were fortunate because a lot of our COVID funds have come in for the cash. So our cash is fine. I know a lot of districts had to borrow, short-term borrowing for that, and that's just an added cost. It's not cheap to do that.
Right.
But we're fine. It's like February moved to November, and then April, like October, it was an odd way, and, you know, and they need to get rid of all of them with all this money. They were saying that maybe they would keep the June to July for next year, but they need to do away with the deferrals if they have the funds to do it.
Right.
That's what I would think most people would think.
Right. Thank you, Penny. Amazing job.
You know, you made another comment, Penny, about the change that we're going to have to do with our end fund balance and our reserves. And I would just think that maybe trying to look at setting some of that money aside for our COPS might not be a bad idea either, because that's going to be definitely an ongoing cost for, I believe it was the next 10 years or 20 years. So that might be a great idea too. Any other comments, questions? I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Second by Trustee Doug Criddle. Roll call vote, Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. That is our last agenda item. Meeting adjourned.